This is your daily news fix, the Daily Brief, right here on RCR.
Good afternoon. It's Wednesday, February 5th, and you're listening to the RCR Daily Brief, your roundup of the day's biggest news. I'm Megan McNamara, and first up, it's Paul Brennan with the news, followed by some insights from RCR host and commentator Marie Buskey on an important cultural moment in the death of woke. Then RCR political analyst William McGimsey weighs in on the Law Commission's hate speech consultation. And of course, Natalie Cutler-Welch is here for RCR Signpost, sharing our newest interviews, key campaigns, and how you can take action. Now for the news.
Good afternoon. Real estate agent Janet Dixon has lost her case against the Real Estate Agents Authority after the High Court dismissed her challenge. In 2023, Dixon refused to complete a compulsory professional development course on Māori language and culture and faced losing her real estate license as a result. She took the case to court, calling the requirement woke madness and argued that agents should not be forced to learn material irrelevant to their profession. Advocacy group Hobson's Pledge backed her stance, saying professional bodies should not act as moral or political arbiters. Associate Justice Minister Nicole McKee agreed that the course had little relevance to real estate work and that the punishment for non-compliance was too harsh. In other New Zealand news, Housing Minister Chris Bishop has announced a turnaround plan for Housing New Zealand, aiming to deliver a net increase of 400 social houses each year. The government said the strategy will cut Housing New Zealand's deficit by $190 million this year and by $354 million by 2027, reducing overall debt by $1.8 billion. ACT leader David Seymour has proposed withdrawing New Zealand from the Paris Agreement before the next election, citing economic concerns and a lack of global participation. Labour's Megan Woods urged Prime Minister Christopher Luxon to reaffirm New Zealand's commitment, warning that exiting the agreement could impact free trade deals linked to climate targets. The Law Commission has launched a public consultation on proposed changes to New Zealand's hate crime laws. The review follows recommendations from the Royal Commission into the Christchurch terror attack. The Free Speech Union has opposed the changes, arguing that the term hate is subjective and risks being used to punish unpopular opinions. Turning to international news, severe flooding in North Queensland has led to evacuations and widespread power outages after more than 1 metre of rainfall in 3 days. Residents in 6 high-risk suburbs of Townsville have been ordered not to return home until floodwaters recede. Prime Minister Anthony Albanese said the disaster relief would be aimed at building back better to create resilience in the region. The US and Mexico have agreed to pause new tariffs for 1 month. The deal will see Mexico deploy 10,000 troops to the US border to crack down on fentanyl trafficking, while the US will step up efforts to curb arms smuggling into Mexico. Similar negotiations are underway with Canada after Prime Minister Justin Trudeau pledged to increase border security. China has also announced retaliatory tariffs on various US exports, including on critical minerals used in high-tech goods, along with a potential anti-monopoly investigation into Google. U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio has taken direct control of U.S. aid after staff were barred from its headquarters. The move follows the Trump administration's efforts, led by Elon Musk's Department of Government Efficiency, to merge USAID with the State Department, cut its workforce, and redirect its $43 billion budget towards national priorities.
Okay, now let's hear from RCR's Marie Buskey on a shift in the cultural landscape as it relates to the debate about whether biological men should be allowed to compete in women's sports. Hello, Marie, over to you.
Hi, it's Marie here from RCR's Daily Brief. If you follow J.K. Rowling on X, you'll be familiar with her pithy style in her dogged pursuit of the protection of women's rights. She posted overnight a new advertisement that has just dropped in the US from activewear company XXXY Athletics, starring US swimmer Riley Gaines and other elite female athletes who have faced scrutiny for their position of preserving women's sports for biological women. Here's what XXXY Athletics had to say in their statement. XXXY Athletics, the only athletic brand to stand up for women's sports, launched a new ad campaign called Real Girls Rock ahead of the National Girls and Women's in Sports Day on February 5th. This campaign leverages the heightened focus on advertising at this time of year to deliver a raw, unfiltered look at the female athletes at the centre of one of the most important cultural conversations in sports today, protecting women's sports. At a time when women's sports are reaching new heights, the release of Real Girls Rocks shifts the spotlight to female athletes, their grit, relentlessness, and what drives them forward. The film highlights and reveals the reality of athletic training, the hard, boring, and punishing work that includes early mornings, repeated failures, injuries, and the resilience to rise and try again. It's a raw, honest look at the journey fueled by passion, perseverance, and the pursuit of one's limits. And now, female athletes and their coaches who advocate for the fairness and integrity of their sports often face brutal harassment and threats on top of their already demanding training. The film is a celebration of their dedication and discipline. Real Girls Rock. Now, as someone who's been following the cultural shift due to critical social justice, this campaign sparks a sharp contrast to previous years. It also shone a light on the perniciousness of cancel culture and that not only businesses are able to stand up and speak out on these issues, but actually thrive and have this message shared without blanket social media censorship. What started as a pushback on Bud Light with their endorsement of Dylan Mulvaney in a few short years has grown into a full-blown campaign by citizens and businesses alike against critical social justice, all achieved by the courage to speak out and express themselves freely. I'm Marie Buskey for RCR's Daily Brief. Back to you, Megan.
Now to hate speech laws. Do we really need them? William McGimsey is here to explain why we don't.
Thanks, Megan. The politicians are trekking to Waitangi today, but meanwhile, new hate crime laws are back on the agenda. The Law Commission is consulting on strengthening New Zealand's hate crime laws. Why do we need new hate crime laws, you might ask? Good question. Paul Brennan spoke to Free Speech Union CEO Jonathan Ayling on the matter yesterday. Here's what he had to say about why this is a flawed idea.
I think Kiwis were broadly across the idea around why hate speech laws don't work. And it's because hate is a subjective notion. And so we can try and apply that to hate crimes as well. But the problem is hate is still a subjective notion. So fairly recently, we've had three forms of vandalism emerge. Not so long ago, some individuals broke into Te Papa and defaced the English version of the treaty, saying the English version doesn't count, only the Te Reo version counts. Is that a hate crime? Well, it's vandalizing public property. I'll let you decide if it's a hate crime. Protesters walked down a street down in Dunedin and threw red paint on an MP's office because they weren't staunch enough in their opposition to the war in Gaza. Is that a hate crime, or is that political speech? You know, still vandalism, still a crime. Someone went along in the middle of the night and did a burnout on K Road on a rainbow crossing. Is that a hate crime? I think probably on that one. That's the one in our time and day, all the would-bes would definitely say that's definitely the hate crime, right? Because of the thought, because of the ideology, because of the way people think about that issue. But all of them are the same crimes, all of them committed with similar intent in mind. The problem is we can't trust the judiciary or our politicians to try and take something that is subjective and apply it in an objective way. And that's not casting aspersions on them. It's simply the fact that we each relate to what is hateful in different ways.
The most pernicious thing about hate crimes, in my view, is that they are literally thought crimes. A hate crime is when you do something that is already illegal, like assaulting someone, but you do it because you bear some sort of malice toward a group. In order for someone to be charged with a hate crime then, the judge and jury need to not only determine that you did it, but must also be able to peer inside the mind and determine why you did it. First of all, if you assault someone, then you've assaulted someone. Does it really matter what you had in your head at the time? And secondly, there's just something incredibly creepy and Orwellian about the law attempting to peek into people's minds and make sure they're not thinking the wrong thing. I agree with Jonathan. Once it's legally established that the crime is worse because you did it for quote-unquote hateful reasons, it's a short jump from there to banning people from giving voice to those hateful reasons with hate speech laws. And so it looks like we're back to woke busybodies trying to control the way people think. This stuff is having a profoundly negative impact on our society, making people more reluctant to discuss the big issues around race, sex, sexuality, gender identity, and religion that are paralysing our society. I thought we were putting the woke stuff away. Didn't we recently vote in a new government, in part, because we were sick of this stuff? Perhaps someone needs to have a bit of a firmer word with the people at the Law Commission, and the rest of the public sector too, while they're at it.
And that wraps up today's commentary. Now let's turn to all things RCR with Natalie.
Thanks, Megan. Yes, it's Natalie here with The Signpost, where we bring you the latest RCR content. We have the latest interviews, upcoming guests, big stories, and ways that you can get involved. Kicking things off, free speech alert. Catch the full interview with Paul Brennan and Jonathan Ayling, CEO of Free Speech Union, who tackle the potential dangers of hate crime laws, the rise of woke judges, and why protecting the rule of law is more important than ever. From Across the Ditch, you can catch Tim Wilms' interview with Paul Brennan with insights into Queensland's puberty blockers' pause, the Liberal leadership swap, and recent racist assaults. Alistair Harding's full interview with Grant Illingworth KC on the COVID inquiry drops today. He's going deep into the phase two, what it really means, and what comes next. And later this week, Waitangi Day history secrets come to light when Professor Paul Moon chats to Simon O'Connor. For those following the COVID-19 inquiry, if you missed Monday night's webinar, you can catch Legal Hub with Katie Ashby-Coppins. She is lifting the lid on a citizen petition she submitted to the US FDA, which is Food and Drug Administration, revealing that independent researchers worldwide have found unacceptable levels of DNA contamination in Pfizer BioNTech and Moderna jabs. Here's a sneak peek.
Given the recent change to the administration and some extra work that was conducted over Christmas, we realised that there was the opportunity for civilians or, you know, average Joe to file a petition with the FDA to call on something to happen. And so that's what we did. We called upon the FDA, filed a petition in the United States. The timing could be quite useful if the new incumbent comes in that we're all hoping to come in respect of health, and that's really how it's come to be.
It sounds like it could be a narrow kind of vote for RFK Jr., who you are referring to, right?
Yes, I am referring to RFK. And look, this is a petition. It's been filed on behalf of my clients, Julian Gillespie, Kevin McKernan, Jessica Rose, names that you all very much know. And it's a petition to the FDA to call on them to suspend or investigate the questionable approval process that was granted, that allowed these products to be granted without going through a requirement, which was an environmental assessment.
If you missed the webinar, no worries. The replay is live now. You can find the link in today's show notes. And finally, the big drop on RCR 2.0, 2025. Our launch is nearly here. If you're not on the mailing list yet, you can head to www.realitycheck.radio/email and just hit the subscribe button so you don't miss out. That's realitycheck.radio/email. That's it from me. Stay informed, stay engaged, and I'll catch you tomorrow. Megan, back to you.
Thanks, Natalie. And you can find all the links mentioned in today's show at the bottom of the episode. Well, that's all for today's RCR Daily Brief. Thanks for tuning in. Have a fantastic day, and we'll catch you tomorrow with another edition of the show. Until then, see ya.